This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Tomorrow, voters go to the polls to cast their ballots in primary elections across the state. One of the most watched races is the fight for the U.S. congressional seat in the 10th District. Both the Democratic and Republican primaries there are being closely watched because they'll determine who runs in the general election for the seat now held by outgoing Congressman Bill Delahunt. We went to Quincy today to find out what people there are thinking about their options in the 10th District.
My name's Bill Phelan. I'm from Quincy. I'm going to be supporting Bill Keating. It seems as though there's a lot of special interests running the show in Washington, and I think we need someone like Bill that will stand up.
My name is Mike Croft. I'm a conservative Republican. I'm sick of Washington, and I think I'm going to vote for Mr. Perry tomorrow for Congress.
Warren Newman.
Actually, I'm going with Malone because somebody who's been in business as long as he has, and all the mud thrown at him, none of it's ever stuck.
Joining us now to talk about tomorrow's primary election is our political panel. Representing the right, we've got Republican analyst Jack Clancy. Jack, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Glad to be here.
And on the other side is our Democratic analyst Susan Tracy, a former state rep and president of the Strategy Group. Susan, thanks for being here.
Thanks.
So let's start first talking about this real Bay State rarity, which is that down in the 10th District, we have this congressional race with national significance. This is basically the GOP's best chance in more than a decade for picking up a House seat here in Massachusetts. And it's been a pretty acrimonious race so far. Susan Tracy, maybe you can start us off and talk about this. We've got State Senator Robert O'Leary running against Norfolk County Attorney William Keating. Give us sort of an overview of this race.
Well, you've got obviously two candidates, both holding elected office. One's a state senator, one is a district attorney. You know, Keating's district attorney seat, while he does not live in the district, he is renting an apartment in Quincy now, but, you know, for the election, the Norfolk County DA's office encompasses probably the largest voting part of the district. Senator O'Leary represents the Cape and the Islands, smaller percentage of the vote. So that's sort of a lay of the land to, you know, liberal Democrats, I would venture they would both say.
Right. And for some background, this is basically the least Democratic district in the state. As you said, it extends from Quincy all the way down to the Cape and Islands. This is the district, Jack Clancy, where Republican Senator Scott Brown found his most support in his own race earlier this year when he ran for Ted Kennedy's special seat. I think it was, what, 60% of the vote down there?
Mm-hmm. Indeed, indeed.
So let's talk more. The Keating-O'Leary race has been pretty acrimonious, in part because of how the two portray each other's stances on different issues. In Keating's case, it's how he describes how O'Leary would handle Social Security. In O'Leary's case, it's how he describes how Keating would handle Afghanistan. You want to give us a sense of what they're saying about one another?
I believe Keating is saying that O'Leary wants to raise the age before you can retire, and it's a scare tactic, I guess you would say, towards the elderly. And O'Leary, in turn, is saying that Keating supports keeping troops in Afghanistan and increasing the number of troops in Afghanistan. So neither of them good places to be if you're a Democrat.
Jack Clancy, I'm interested in your take on this, in part because I wonder, at a time when the economy is in such tough place, are people thinking that much about big national issues or international issues like Social Security, Afghanistan, Iraq, even though this is clearly a congressional seat with national implications? Are they thinking more about issues related to them today at home?
I think you're right in the latter part, that indeed it's about jobs, employment. I think Social Security, though, is definitely an important issue. I think he might have gotten trapped a little bit, O'Leary did, in that interview. I think it was a quick lightning round of questioning, and they were simply supposed to answer yes or no, yes or no. And when it came to Social Security, would you raise the age? And he said yes, without any chance to follow up. So I think he might have gotten trapped by Keating on that one. So it's maybe a little unfair to pick on him about that.
And he actually has a fairly nuanced position on this.
I think he does, yes. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but it's more nuanced than just yes, I'm sure.
as positions often are.
Yes, they are. Yeah. And of course, we did mention the very important issue that just occurred yesterday. A district attorney, Keating, did save that purse from the woman.
Yeah, I'm told that Senator O'Leary is actually looking for Whitey Bulger right now.
Exactly.
I think he's going to find him tonight.
He's only got about 24 hours to make some heroic gesture of some sort.
This was him witnessing a purse snatching.
Yes, I think he witnessed the purse snatching in a restaurant.
The purse snatcher, I believe.
And I think he's 58 years old.
He was a campaign volunteer.
Still had a good sprint in him.
Chased the purse snatcher outside. And a Republican might say, well, what did he do once he got the money? But then again.
Listeners, what race are you going to be watching tomorrow? It's a big, to many people, exciting and interesting race down in the 10th District, where we have a chance for a congressional seat to turn around and possibly go to Republican. We want to know what races you're watching, what issues you're most concerned about in tomorrow's primaries. Do you even plan to vote in tomorrow's primaries? We wonder if you think the 10th District could actually swing and give Massachusetts a chance to have a GOP Republican in the seat. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jack, I want to have you comment once more on Social Security, because one of the reasons that could be significant down there is we're talking the Cape. We're talking a place where a lot of people are retired, depending on those Social Security checks. Do you think that people who might think, you know, if O'Leary reduces my check or delays, makes me wait more years to get my check, could that actually be something that could hurt him in the polls?
I think it could, although, as you mentioned earlier, I do still think that the issue is employment and jobs, and Social Security drops down the priority list a bit. And I think most people who pay attention to these kinds of things also know that, as we mentioned earlier, too, it's a nuanced position. I don't think he is particularly interested in cutting checks, or he may want to raise the rate. I mean, something has to happen to Social Security. There's a problem there, and it could run out in 20 years or so. We have to make some decisions. And to even mention it sometimes is a mistake. As we talked about third rail in politics, this is one of them. But I think he'll probably do fine as long as he sticks to actually, I don't know if he'll win or not, but I think he'll do fine if he tries to explain his position better on Social Security. I don't think it'll be a big issue at all.
And Susan Tracy, as you said, O'Leary and Keating are also sparring over Afghanistan. As I understand it, O'Leary has said that Keating supports sending 30,000 more troops to Afghanistan. Keating says that's a gross misrepresentation of his position, that what he supports is Obama's timeline for Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And O'Leary says, well, if you support the timeline, then you must support the troops. Is this a big distinction here that we should care about?
Honestly, no, I actually agree with Jack on this one. I think, war was a big issue in the last presidential election. I think in this election, especially in a congressional district, yes, I think there are people who will care about that issue, but I think the bread and butter, economy, jobs issues are where it's at today.
Susan Tracy and Jack Clancy, would you both address this question, which is, of course, this is a primary. So when we're talking about O'Leary and Keating sparring, we're talking about two Democrats beating mm-hmm. each other up. One of them is going to win tomorrow. Does the person who wins come out so beaten up that they're hurt in the general election and there's sort of more damage done than that? Ultimately, does the fighting here hurt the Democratic Party because you come out with a Democrat so tarred or so stained?
I don't get the sense that this race is as vicious as many races are. My sense is that whomever the candidate is, the other candidate will quickly endorse them. And, you'll see unity in this race. I think the bigger question is, who's the Republican opponent going to be?
And that's a case where I do think they are beating themselves up a bit down there. Obviously, Perry has some issues, some personal issues regarding when he was on the police force, was a supervisor of a shift. We know that whole story. And they're bringing it up. I'm not sure that Joe Malone is necessarily talking about it a bit, but they both, and Joe has his issues with business, where he has had a couple of failed businesses. But he has been a statewide politician and knows his way around how to get around those things. Keep in mind also that this backing of these two candidates has been very splintered. The Republican machine in Massachusetts, however small it might be, maybe lawnmower size, is still behind Perry, along with Mitt Romney, and perhaps along with Eric Fernstrom, I understand, who was the genius behind the Scott Brown candidacy.
And let's go to Perry and Malone shortly, but I want to jump actually over to the 9th district just west of the 10th, because we have a caller who we're going to get to shortly who wants to talk about the 9th. So what's happening there is that we have incumbent Democrat Steve Lynch facing a pretty serious primary challenge from a political director for the New England SEIU, Mac D'Alessandro. So how about Susan, you give us an overview of this before we go to our caller. What's going on with this race?
Well, as you mentioned, Stephen Lynch is the incumbent congressman. He was elected in the special election on September 11th, 2001, in the primary. The basis for the D'Alessandro race seems to be Stephen Lynch's vote against the president's health care plan and his lack of support for a public option. That's the core of what I believe has drove him into this race.
And Lynch is a Democrat who tends to be conservative.
A more conservative Democrat, yeah.
Anti-abortion, supported Iraq and Afghanistan, as you just said, voted against the health care bill. Now let's hear from Gabriel from Dorchester who wants to comment about the knife. Hi, Gabriel. Are you planning to vote tomorrow?
I am, yeah.
And who do you plan to cast a ballot for?
Well, I support Mac D'Alessandro. I think he's been much more in line with progressive causes. I think it would be great to have a true progressive in the Ninth District, and I think that he stands much stronger on progressive issues than Congressman Lynch has.
Now, one of the issues here, and Gabriel, stay with us, because I believe that if Lynch wins, he's looked at as a strong contender against possibly running against Scott Brown. So, Jack and Susan, if Steve Lynch were to lose, is the Democratic Party in a weakened position when it comes to finding a candidate to run against Scott Brown?
No, not at all. There are a number of other people who I think would look at that race. And 2012, as you know, is a presidential year, a time when liberal Democrats do quite well in our state. So no, I don't see that as something that is negative in terms of the Scott Brown race at all.
And certainly if D'Alessandro should win, I doubt that he would be in line for that seat at all, given the fact that he'd be in office for such a short time, and he's obviously quite a bit left.
Listeners, give us a call. We're talking about the primary elections tomorrow. The big one down in the 10th district is the race for outgoing Congressman Bill Delahunt's seat. There are also some interesting races going on. Steve Lynch is running. So is Joe Malone. We have a lot of interesting people running. We want to hear what you think. Tell us if you think the 10th district could actually swing Republican. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. So we jumped over to the 9th, but let's go back to the 10th, because Jack Clancy, you had been talking about Joe Malone and Jeffrey Perry. Now, this is also an interesting race because Jeff Perry has a problematic history. Can you tell us a little bit about the Perry situation?
It happened, I believe, 18 years ago. And in fact, he got through a few other elections without it ever being brought up. My understanding is it was brought up by an anonymous caller to a radio station. The issue is, I believe he was a supervisor on a shift. One of the policemen asked a young lady to pull her pants down to check for drugs, essentially. Something ridiculous, of course. And because he was a supervisor on that shift, he's always been blamed for that.
An illegal strip search.
An illegal strip search of a young lady. All sorts of words have been thrown around, obviously.
And again, Perry didn't do it. Perry supervised an officer who did it, but
he really
took a lot of heat as a result of having been the supervisor.
Yes, he did. And of course, once that issue is brought up and that label is put on you that you're even associated with such a thing, pretty hard to shake. And I think if you're a Democrat who wins that primary tomorrow, you may want to see Perry win because it'll be an easy set of ads to put together. That's not to say that Joe Malone is squeaky clean. And by the way, in the interest of full disclosure, my company did provide some media services for Joe when he ran for treasurer about 12 years ago. So I have met Joe and his wonderful wife, Linda, and I would love to see them win. But I think Jeff Perry has a difficult task ahead.
Susan, could you comment on that, too? Because as Jack just said, he has a bit of a conflict of interest. So let's get a perspective on someone who can remove yourself in that way.
Well, I'd look at a different issue on the Perry, sort of the personal issues and the sort of sense of scandal. And she wasn't just a young lady, by the way. She was a teenage girl. Mm. So, that's a little different as well. Those things are all there. But I think more importantly, if we have a Tea Party candidate running, he's our Tea Party candidate in this state. And I think the real question is going to be whether he's going to be too conservative for the general election in the 10th.
The Jeff Perry would be our
Tea
Party.
Yeah, absolutely.
Candidate.
Yes.
Joe Malone did get the endorsement of the Boston Globe, which kind of runs parallel to what you're saying, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he's the deep conservative in that race, and it'll be interesting. My guess is that that's where the momentum is in the Republican Party. That's where the numbers are up. That's where the Secretary of State suggests that the higher volume of voter from a percentage perspective is going to be in the Republican Party.
I think when Delahunt won the seat, I want to say 12 years ago, he won it by 8 votes, and it was a recount. In fact, mm-hmm. I think everybody went to bed thinking he had lost, and he
Correct.
Came back and won. So it's a very strong Republican district.
So the issue here is whether Jeff Perry has a character issue, but there's also a potential character issue for Malone, which is maybe too strong to call it a character issue. But the issue is that when he was state treasurer, some of his aides stole $9.4 million from the government. Jack, do you think that we could fairly say that both candidates as a result have some sort of credibility or character problem?
I think because they're working so hard to, because they both have the same basic approach, although as Susan mentioned, maybe Perry is more conservative. Basic approach, it goes to personality. And so you can really dredge things up if you work hard enough. I think they both, yes, I guess they both would probably say there are some minor skeletons in their closet. In the case of Joe, of course, the investigation showed no connection to him in any of the problems.
We've been talking about tomorrow's primaries and how people will vote, and we've been talking with our political panel, Republican analyst Jack Clancy and Democratic analyst Susan Tracy. We're going to be back to talk more about this, but right now we're going to take a break. Stay with us. This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. We're here with our political panel, Democratic analyst Susan Tracy and Republican analyst Jack Clancy, to talk about tomorrow's primary election, where we have a number of interesting races going on, including one with national significance. It's a congressional race in the 10th district. But now let's talk about the 2nd Suffolk district. This is where Sonia Chang-Diaz really squeaked out quite a sort of stunning upset over Diane Wilkerson about a year or so ago. When was it? 2 years ago, exactly. Mm. And now Sonia Chang-Diaz is being challenged by another candidate. This is a candidate named Hassan Williams. And Hassan charges that even though Sonia Chang-Diaz came in saying, this is a district that needs leadership and we haven't had it under Diane Wilkerson, that Hassan Williams claims we also don't have it under Sonia Chang-Diaz. Now, she does say that she's had some accomplishments. Those include passage of a Cori reform bill. It includes passage of a foreclosure reform bill. But Susan Tracy, can you tell me if you think that Chang-Diaz's challenger, Hassan Williams, has a point here? Have we not seen enough leadership out of her in the 2 years since she was elected?
You know, her first term in office to be able to work on two issues, Cori reform and foreclosures, that I think are really important to that district. And that's a funny district. You know, it goes from, you know, the Back Bay to, you know, Roxbury. I mean, it really is a very diverse district. And I think those are good issues for her to work on.
In fact, it's often thought of as two distinct districts, right?
Absolutely.
We have sort of Roxbury and parts of the South End, which can be very black. And then we have sort of white progressive parts of the district, JP, and other parts of the mm-hmm. South End. So it's a very interesting
And Chinatown. And yes, it's a very diverse and interesting district. Probably not a district that's easy to represent given that broad spectrum. So my inclination is that in your first term, you know, to be able to accomplish two issues that are pretty critical to your district, my inclination is that people don't throw you out after one term when you haven't done anything but some good things.
I think probably a number of state reps probably have gone through 3 or 4 or 5 terms never really being able to attach their name to a serious bill of this sort. I mean, mm-hmm. I agree with you, Susan. I think it seems to me that Sonia Chang-Diaz definitely has been in the forefront. She's also made herself quite visible in the community, and she's gained the respect of the Boston Phoenix, the Boston Globe, the Dorchester Reporter, which is actually a critical
thing. You know, I'll say one other thing, too. A lot of times I think people feel that you're most vulnerable in your first, you know, time that you, you know, stand for reelection. But I would say that you're probably your strongest then. You know, the voters are still the people that you met. You're fresh. You've learned a lot. Mm-hmm. You've gone to door-to-door, and the doors haven't changed. I think sometimes when you've been in for a long time and haven't been tested, your district can change around you. So she's probably more in tune with her district now than she would be maybe 5 or 10 years from now.
And Hassan Williams actually is an interesting character.
He is.
I mean,
I agree.
He was a homeless, as I understand it, in his early 20s, really kind of leading somewhat of an aimless life, but received a law degree from Boston College at age 30. I mean, a real bootstrap story in my estimation. And
yeah,
so,
he's
I mean,
got a great biography,
exactly.
I agree.
Certainly a person that you want to at least find more about. And many of these races, we have 200 Republicans who are running for statewide races. We'll get down to 100 primary Republicans in the state. Half of them really are just trying to get their name out there the first time. Mm-hmm. When was the last time there were this many Republicans running at state rep level? And so I think this may be the case for Hassan. He seems like a very bright young man. And who knows? We can't predict what will happen. I think Sonia does have a very strong case here. But Hassan sounds like a very interesting man.
In this second Suffolk state rep race that we've been talking about between Sonia Cheng Diaz and Hassan Williams, there is to some people a racial element to this primary. As you said, Susan, this district covers a very diverse population. When Sonia Cheng Diaz won 2 years ago and defeating Diane Wilkerson, that marked the first time in decades that the seat was held by a senator who wasn't African-American. Now, Cheng Diaz's challenger, Hassan Williams, is black. Neither candidate has sort of directly or explicitly brought up the issue of race, but I wonder if each of you think that that actually could play a role tomorrow.
I think if you look back at how close that race was with Diane Wilkerson, when I believe at the time she had already been indicted, or at least the question of...
I'm not sure. There may have been, between the primary and the final, I think that may have happened. So I don't know that that had happened yet.
All right. Well, there certainly, I believe there was some knowledge of the issue and the question of whether or not she took money, was extorting money from people for certain issues. And yet she nearly won. That tells you how desperate we really are for people of color to gain a position in the inner city. And I think I don't know that it's an issue, but I think people may vote along racial lines just because there's just so few candidates like that out there. And so you may find that Hassan gains a large percentage perhaps for that reason.
So that second Suffolk Senate race is also tomorrow. Another piece of election news that happened over the weekend dealt with the gubernatorial election. And this was specifically about Green Rainbow candidate Jill Stein. Now, over the weekend, the Boston Media Consortium, and my full disclosure here is that that media consortium includes WBUR. That consortium said that Stein had not met qualifying criteria to be included in two debates sponsored by the group. The first is scheduled for September 22nd. Now, we've since found out that actually Stein is going to be included in that debate, although I don't know if there's a debate about the second one. But this, you know, I know, Susan, from having talked with you earlier, you have quite a strong feeling about this, the idea that Stein could have been excluded.
Well, I do think in this case, if you had a set of three criteria, right, you had to be over 5% in a poll, you had to have an active campaign and three staff, and you had to have raised $100,000 between January 1st and October 1st. And I feel like that's the squishy part of this for me. The first debate is September 21st, and yet we've got a threshold of October 1st for when you have to raise $70,000 by, or $100,000, and she's raised $70,000. I do think if there are rules and you know what they are, you should meet them.
And, of course, I should say here that the reason those criteria exist is basically to keep wackos from running, more or less. You know, you want to make sure people are actual credible candidates, which is why they establish some. But, you know, Jack, there are obviously interesting – there are strong arguments for why even people who might not meet this criteria should be able to run. Do you want to talk about that at all?
I think indeed there are. Indeed there are. We have to give anyone who's worked hard enough to get their 10,000 votes – in this case, I think she got 16,000 votes to get on the ballot to have a say. And sure, maybe later in the debates, maybe this some of these criteria may come into play. But in the early debates, we've had one debate. I think the next debate was going to be about human services. I think to leave Jill Stein out of a debate about human services seems ridiculous to me. I think she belongs there. A lot of people will say, well, she'll draw votes from Governor Patrick. That may be the case. But having Jill Stein on the stage when you're Governor Patrick makes you more of a moderate. I'm not so sure it's a bad thing to have Jill Stein on the stage. He's perceived as quite left of center. To have her on the stage, the other debate, he was able to debate Jill Stein about $200 million that was available for mall development. Who else could he have that debate with and come out looking like the strong moderate? So I think it's not a bad thing for Duvall to have her there. I don't know that she'll necessarily draw more votes because of it. And I think it could look bad, frankly, for all involved if she's left out.
And I think many people have felt that Jill Stein has really brought valuable and interesting issues. You know, even if there are a few people that think that Jill Stein could win, she certainly is a voice that many people think mm-hmm. is important to hear.
And one other point, I think I might have mentioned this last time we were together, it was a very short debate. When you have four candidates, and this is probably also where, I know this is where Susan's coming from as well. When you have four candidates, and you have 1 hour, and you've got to give everyone equal time, you can't drill down on the issues. It is a problem. Mm-hmm. And so I'm riding the fence here a little bit, and that later in the debates, let's think about maybe narrowing it down. But if you're going to have a debate with four people, it's got to be a minimum of 90 minutes, perhaps 2 hours, to get to the issues. They didn't even talk about Cape Wind or any of the other issues that were out there, the casinos and in the last debate. And it's because Keller tried so hard to try to keep things even.
And I think in that Keller debate, they actually eliminated the opening statements to try to let people go right to the question. So clearly an attempt to drive very quickly at the issues.
Just from a pure campaign perspective, to put on a campaign manager's hat, you know, in some ways, this gives Jill Stein a great opportunity. There's a real opportunity to say to your base, look, I meet two of the three criteria. Help me get there. I mean, if I was Charlie Baker, I might help raise the $30,000 for. But, you know, there's an organizing opportunity in it. And maybe there's a statement in that organizing opportunity if you can't do that as well.
And I think it's worth noting that as far as wanting to make sure a candidate is credible, you know, when Scott Brown was first polled running against Martha Coakley, it was, what, a 35-point gap? So that may have not looked credible. And look what happened in the end.
Mm-hmm. He was the only other person running, though, right. So it would have been a funny debate without him.
Before we go, I want to mention briefly that this year is the 90th anniversary of women's right to vote. But despite all of that time that's passed, few women actually get voted into office. Massachusetts is particularly behind in this area. We have only 26% of our state legislators being female. Susan Tracy, what do you make of that, considering how progressive Massachusetts is generally thought of as being?
Well, you know, it is amazing to me that, and we've been stuck at that 25% number for a number of years. I think that's what it was at when I was in the legislature in the 90s. So, and we've had only two women elected to statewide constitutional office in the history of the Commonwealth. Shannon O'Brien and Martha Coakley are the only two elected statewide for constitutional office. As we know, Evelyn Murphy was on a ticket, and as we know, Jane Swift was appointed to the position when Salucci left. So, you know, it is horrific. But the other thing I will say is when you talk about the 90-year anniversary of the vote, that to me is amazing too. Our country was founded in 1776, and we've only had the ability to vote as women for 90 years. That's a pretty sad statement as well.
We've been talking with our Democratic analyst Susan Tracy and our Republican analyst Jack Clancy about tomorrow's primaries. The polls are open tomorrow from 7 in the morning until 8 in the evening. To find out your polling location, you can visit wheredoivotema.com. Again, that's wheredoivotema.com. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston. Join us again after the break.